Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi there. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
I've really gotten into podcasts since we started this. Did you know the number one podcast in The Good Place is Mozart and Jimi Hendrix talking about music? And the number one podcast in The Bad Place is Joseph Stalin recapping The Bachelor.
Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about Chapter 32, Season 2, Episode 5, The Ballad of Donkey Doug. Written by Matt Murray, directed by Rebecca Asher, and including guest cast Kirby Howell-Baptiste, Eugene Cordero, Mitch Narito, Flula Borg, Emily O'Mara, and Fumi. Chidi decides to break up with Simone so he doesn't doom her as well. Eleanor and Janet help Chidi practice breakup scenarios in a simulator until Eleanor convinces him that Simone will be fine to just do it and be a person. Jason travels to Jacksonville to put his father, Donkey Doug, on the right track to getting into the good place. When Jason realizes he's a lost cause, he saves his friend Pillboy instead. My guests today are writer of the episode, Matt Murray, Mitch Narito, who plays Donkey Doug, and Manny Jacinto, who plays Jason Mendoza. Manny, Mitch, and Matt, welcome. Everything is complicated, but it's happening. Welcome, you all. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having us. Thanks.
Matt, by way of intro, don't we have you to thank, in a way, for Ted Danson being part of The Good Place on NBC, Thursdays 8:30, 7:30 Central?
I guess so, insofar as I pitched him a show that went nowhere, but that introduced him to Mike, who was in the room, and then Mike had a good idea for a show that became The Good Place.
Oh, man. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Ted tells that story in a very early episode of this podcast. I asked you at the wrap party why I haven't been offered that show, and I am not satisfied with the answer.
I mean, if they want to dust it off, I'll dig back into it. It was a show about a young, soft, liberal dork, me.
Okay.
Going to clerk for essentially Antonin Scalia.
Oh, wow.
But it would be in like Montana or something, mm-hmm. Some sort of northern exposure-y style. But they passed on it. And then 2 days later, Antonin Scalia died. And then they were like, and then we were like, now do you want to do it? And they're like, no, still no.
Wait a second. It was that close of a coincidence?
Yeah. It was like, it was right before.
Do you think you're responsible for Scalia's death?
I mean, I hope so.
Oh, come on. Mitch, we have talked about Donkey Doug. We've heard about Donkey Doug for 2.5 seasons of television. We finally meet him in season 3. What were you told about Donkey Doug? Who were you told this dude is?
So when I got the breakdown for the audition, it said Filipino, 40s, handsome.
And you're like, boom.
I got nailed one it. Of those. I got one of those. I went into the audition, and originally the first audition, it was only like a line. And I got a call a few days later. They said, hey, we liked your work. We want to give you a couple more things to play with. And then I got it, and they brought me back in. And then after that, it was kind of, it's been a wild ride since then.
Yeah.
Like, I got to do the first episode where you first meet him at the Swamp Stomp.
Right.
And when they were filming that, they didn't tell me anything else about that character.
Oh, interesting.
So I didn't know, like, they just said he's an older pop locker. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it. And they didn't tell me anything after that. And then they had sent me sides, but they were dummy sides. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that until later on. Like, originally...
Here again, this is it's a fake bit of script, something that they never intend to shoot for the show, but it gives us the sense of who this character could be, right?
Yeah. So in the original sides that I received, it was Michael's character. It just said Officer. Tahani was just a generic name, and it was actually Pillboy.
Okay.
Not Jason. So I did that, and then a couple weeks later, they brought me in for the table read, and that really blew my mind because it was such a surreal experience. They sent me the actual script, and I was looking through it, and the names had changed, and I figured, you know, like, I'm a big fan of the show myself, and I saw that... I was going to be doing a scene with Michael, Tahani, Jason, and Pillboy.
Yeah.
And it, like, I was like, is this right? Did they mess up and send me the wrong sides by accident?
No, it's just the world's most secret show.
Yeah. But the funniest part of it all was when I booked the show, my fiance was like, oh, that's cool, that's cool. And then, like, when I told her, oh, I think I'm going to be in a scene with Ted Danson, and she was like, holy crap.
Mother forking.
Ted Danson. and like, and
that's
yes.
All of our reactions. Yeah. That's everyone's reaction. Yeah. That's your universal reaction.
Every time I see him.
Yeah. And so it was fun. And like, for the table read, that was such a great experience. It was like super overwhelming though, because I didn't realize everybody was going to be in that room.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it's a big room.
It's a big room. It's a good room.
Yeah, like, I thought I would be with a couple people, and then, like, the higher-ups, you know, would probably just, like, send a proxy or something.
Sure.
And then I walk in, and there's, like, 40, 50 people in the room, plus, you know, like, miscellaneous casting crew.
Oh, yeah.
And
Ted Danson.
Yes.
And
Mother forking.
Ted Danson.
Yes. But the pleasant thing was, is, like, everybody on the cast and the crew is just, like, super positive, super relatable, like, nicest people I've ever met.
It's kind of amazing. Now, do you pop and lock?
I do not. I do not pop and lock. I wish I could.
Yeah.
I'll leave that to the experts.
We actually, we came up with the idea for this episode before we shot the premiere for this season. So you weren't intended to be in the premiere, but we had, after we came up with this idea, and we were like, oh, we should plant Donkey Doug in the first episode.
Right.
And get him kicked out of the dance crew there, or have him quit the dance crew there, and then people will remember him, and he'll come back in episode 6.
It does make it weirder, right? That we've like, we've talked about him, we've heard about him for 2 seasons, and then we meet him. I want to talk about this at length. I suppose we'll do it here. In that first episode, Donkey Doug has a line of dialogue where he says, Jason... you know you're my boy, but, and it's, you know, it's a nice little planted seed.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Did you know at that point, Manny? Obviously what I'm suggesting is, did you know that Donkey Doug was Jason's father?
I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure I did know. And it was just funny that I was doing the scene with Mitch and he had no idea. It's like, hey, man, you're my dad. And it was funny, too, because I think at one point, I think they had to stop things and they had to gray out Mitch's hair.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
mustache, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And then Mitch was just sitting there and he's like, why do I have to be so much older and stuff? But yeah, it was just so funny to me. But I think, when did I find out? I think it was before we did the first table read. And I think Darcy gave me a nudge. And she's like, did you hear? And then I started asking around, and I think Joe is the one who kind of gave me the lowdown on the family secret.
It's such a funny and weird bit that we'll talk about when we get to the airport scene. So we open on this episode with, you know, everybody's kind of a little bit in stasis. Like, Eleanor doesn't have much to do, so she's using Janet's powers to check up on her friends from high school. I guess she's looking to, what, find out who she might help?
Yeah, and she's just found out that Janet contains all the knowledge in the universe. It's kind of a throwback to when she first meets Janet in, you know, at the beginning of season one.
Mm-hmm.
So she's using Janet. They're kind of, you know, now in a place where they're deciding who to help now that they know this big secret. So
Chidi has this terrible problem. His overarching thing is that he cannot lie. Like, he, no matter what, he's not going to do it. He, you know, it will so break his brain that he's not going to do it. Eleanor suggests that he has to ghost her and just, like, disappear. She's done it hundreds of times. She wants him to do it. Something that I found really charming for two different reasons is Janet's bing. Like, yes. Janet bings her way into the thing. And it's Darcy doing this hilarious physicality of, like, sort of trying to sidestep into scenes as though she was magic. And I find it funny I loved it so much for two reasons. One, she hasn't been doing this for all of season three, all of the time in Australia. She's, like, missing her old life and how it was. And also, Eleanor and Chidi have to pretend to imagine that. They don't know. They've never seen Janet pop in out of nowhere and scare you on the wrong side. We always play it that if you turn to your right and say Janet, she always pops up on your left. It's a really funny, fun game.
Yeah, they don't know what she's talking about when she says, I used to do this thing. Right. They're just taking her word for it.
Yeah, you cut to each of them going like, what?
Yeah, she's figuring out what it's like to have a body for the first time. And it's weird. She doesn't know what to do with her hands.
I also love that... that you provide this, like, encyclopedic and universally huge set of skills for Janet, and then end with this sort of girly, like, I'm kind of a nerd. Like, she goes, I know this and this and this and this. I'm kind of a nerd.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very, I don't know.
That's something in the room we're obsessed when very beautiful women
right.
claim to be nerds because they, like, saw Star Wars once.
Right.
Yeah.
It feels like a thing from a feature. It feels like, you know, that kind of trope of, like,
I'm kind of a nerd.
Oh, I have glasses. We hear Jason's Duval chant when he exits the airport again. We heard a little bit about that in a preview. I texted you last week about that to go, like, what are you saying?
I think from the beginning, Joe knew that nobody really says, like, Jacksonville, or they don't really do that chant. It was always Duval, but I think Mike was like, nobody's gonna understand what that is. And it wasn't until this huge Blake Bortles community and Jaguar fan community started tweeting out their anger about they don't actually say that, we responded with saying Duval. So I think a lot of them are now satisfied, and I think I just got a tweet
and
where, like,
stop tweeting to you.
They were like, yeah, we were ecstatic, we started high-fiving each other when we heard that. So, yeah, I think we made some people happy with that.
It feels very Jacksonville because it's confusing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it seems out of nowhere and unrelated. Like, I had to replay it in last week's episode. I had to replay it 10 times. I texted other people on this show about it to be like, what's he saying? And finally, I texted you and was like, what are you saying? And you're like, I think Duval. It's so strange.
Yeah, and like when Joe and I were out there, we got to witness it firsthand. And it was like, oh, they actually say this. But why?
I mean, it's saying something that they don't actually want to claim their city, that they don't want to, we're not going to say we're from Jackson.
Right.
We don't want people to actually know that.
We got an early rough cut of this episode before we got the finished one. In the early one, the airport was not labeled Randy Macho Man Savage Non-International Airport. That bit came in very late. Now, was that in the script?
That was in the script.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And I haven't seen the full, CGI version yet, but... We wanted it to be very clear that the non was added after the fact.
The non is huge and in a different font.
Yeah.
The non is all caps.
It was once international. It's not anymore.
It reads. It's so dumb. This episode is full of Easter eggs, I feel like. Tahani's carrying a magazine in this scene about her breakup with Larry Hemsworth. She named up Sting. On the back is a sort of schmaltzy book by Gay Parello, who is a
prop
crew member.
Master.
Yes.
On the brilliant show. Brilliant prop designer.
And it seemed as though this was like the prequel to the sequel or something. Like, it seems as though there are other books in the lore of...
Yes, and that goes back to Parks and Rec, I believe.
Does it really?
I think
back
so.
Back once more into the Den of the Lions by Gay Parello?
Yeah, I think she has a series.
So crazy. Here is where we learn that Donkey Doug is Jason's father, and it's a delicious scene because it appears as though, like, Tahani's like, what? Like, Jamila plays it so funny, and you can see Ted going, yeah, I didn't know how to tell you. Like, it's clear that Michael knew this, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he knew because he knows everything about them. But it's such a bummer of a thought. When it was pitched in the room, it kind of bummed everyone out. Everyone was like, this is hilarious. We have to do it. But it's also like, oh, no. Because we were trying to figure out, like, we wanted this episode to be about Jason and his father, but when it's like, okay, Jason has to save somebody, the obvious thing is like he would save Pillboy, but we also wanted to meet Jason's father. It's like, okay, so how do we, he's never talked about his father, like how do we get him to a place where we could believe that he would want to go save his father? And then, yeah, I was like, what if he's like, yeah, I feel like I talk about Donkey Doug all the time.
And they're
like,
so funny.
Oh, no. Because we also always wanted, like...
Well, it's the walk away, too. Manny, you're like, what are you talking about? I talk about Donkey Doug all the time. And then you're like,
no big deal.
And you head off. And leaving Tahani to go like,
oh, no.
Sorry.
Yeah, we always imagined Donkey Doug, or Jason's dad, even before it was Donkey Doug, as like, the model was like Justin Bieber's father.
Yeah.
Like one of those dudes who's like... it's not my son. He's like my bro.
Right.
We like go to strip clubs together, like whatever. It's like that kind of dude.
So I missed it. Did you say when you decided that Donkey Doug, was that recent or was that something in earlier seasons that you knew was headed?
No, that was at the beginning of this season.
Okay.
And we were like, we want to do something about his dad, but we've never mentioned his dad. We know. And so I was like, oh, like we mentioned Donkey Doug. Like what if, and we know that we want this dad to be one of his bros. So like it seemed like an easy solution.
Oh, man. so good.
We learned that the sort of marching orders get laid out. The premise of the episode is laid out here in the sense that they're going to try to save Donkey Doug by getting him his electrician's license back or having him complete it and lead an honest life. Perhaps in the shortest shorthand for Jacksonville, the monster truck taxi cab. You did that. You crushed a car.
That happened, yeah.
How many times did you do that?
Once.
Why did you do that? Like,
I think that was Mike's pitch. I wish I could claim credit for it. But then once it was there, I became terrified that it was going to go away. Like for like logistical reasons or comedy reasons.
Not that
reasons.
It would go wrong and someone would get hurt. You were afraid it would go away and not get shot.
Yeah, I was afraid they'd be like, oh, it's too expensive or not feasible or like, do we actually think they would have monster truck cabs? Like, I was like, no, we can't take it out. Please, please, please. And then we did it.
Do you have any idea the cost or the price?
I mean, it was a dummy car, I believe.
Sure.
They like, swapped out a dummy car.
But still.
I mean.
It's made of metal.
I would actually like to know how much it costs to rent a monster truck, just for personal reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just love how Jason's character, when he's like, can I help you with your bags? And then he just tosses them up into the bed.
Doesn't even blink. It's like, this is totally normal.
I mean, 12 feet high. Just crazy. A whole episode of this podcast could be done about the next scene, which is the four of you meeting at Donkey Doug's door. It is so... crazy and nuanced and great. Mitch, you answer the door with a bong and a Hulk hand, right?
Gay Perello found that.
Is that right?
Gay Perello.
Just so crazy. It's another, it seems like a running trait of Tahani too, that she's always the one. It happened with my character early on where Michael's like, oh, he's a very evil, he's the all-knowing judge or whatever, and his name is Sean. And she's like, sorry, his name is Sean. And she does it here too, where she's like, you call him Donkey Doug in person? And Mitch, you've got this great soliloquy about like son versus boy.
Yeah,
and it's so... Mobius, like it's so street. It's like, I mean, like some, but not some, but like my boy, like it's so much fun. Was that just a ball to perform?
It was like, I knew when I first saw that line, like I was trying to figure out what this character would sound like. And that line really dictated a lot of the rest of the character.
Sure.
Cause I was trying to figure out like, for him, this speech is normal. Like this is him just talking.
It makes complete sense to him, right?
It's completely like, it's 100% like him.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out, okay, how do you say this without, like, you know, like, making it sound real? And I came to the conclusion that Donkey Doug had some sort of long-term brain damage. like, the way to make it sound natural, it was, like, a cross between Sylvester Stallone and a lot of, like, the hype men from the 90s, like, rap and R&B. Like, you know, like...
Cheer.
Yeah, like... Like, right here, like when they introduced the song, you know? So it was like a lot of yeah, you know? Like, so that, like, the character for me was somewhere between Rocky getting punched in the head a little too much and then, like, you know, like a hype man from the 90s. And then that line is just, when I figured that out, like, it just made the line a lot more accessible to me, I guess you could say.
That's awesome.
Manny, you do some hilarious things in this scene. Like, it's so Jason and it's so simple, but it's so complicated. You go and you counter, you go and you stand with Donkey Doug, and we're doing this, you know, cross shot at a doorway. When Donkey Doug gets scared that Michael might be a cop, you hide the bomb behind your back.
Yeah. Well, first he hands it to his own son.
Right.
He's going to set up his own son for possession.
That seems very reasonable. But you hide it behind that. And then when Donkey Doug says something that's overtly filthy about, like, let's go sit in the hot tub and put things in each other or whatever.
Yeah.
You lean in and tweak your nose in this, like
did
it work?
It was just so fun to play. I think at that moment I was just listening and I mean, with Jason's personality, he's just like from one place to another. But I felt like what I did there just really complimented Jason and Donkey Doug's relationship. Like, they're bros, you know, ride till we die. But, yeah, it was super fun to play.
It's a very funny suspension of disbelief where you're like, oh no, is he a cop? And it's like, you know him. Like, you came here with him.
He forgot in like the
in
three
a split
seconds.
Second.
Yeah.
And then on the back end of it, you when Tahani's like, again, I'm his wife, and Donkey Doug's like, wow, you must really love him. You're like, oh, that's really sweet. Like, yeah. Your brain
it's like,
is
that's
just,
my girl.
Yeah. It's so funny. Janet builds a virtual reality simulator. Which, of course, Eleanor immediately wants to use for...
For sex. That's what technology is for.
Yes.
I wish that were incorrect, but that does
it's
seem to
true.
Be... Yeah.
Yeah, Oculus Rift. Immediately.
I wanted to ask this before we moved on. What conversations were had about what it meant to be where Donkey Doug lived? Like, aside from garbage floating in a pool.
Yeah.
Like, in an unswimmable pool. All the signs in your apartment are of, like, dangerous places one shouldn't be.
Yeah,
much
they've
less
stolen jealous. Those signs. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's all our set deck department. They're so good at that. They found a perfectly, like, Florida-looking, like, apartment complex in Hollywood and filled it with the right kind of trashy trash. And
there were
great.
Bongs everywhere.
Bongs everywhere,
right?
Yeah.
There were bongs everywhere.
Prop bongs.
Yes.
Of course.
We see Pillboy. We see Eugene Cordero enter as Pillboy. And if ever there were a time for a spinoff, it's these three. I'd watch this show all day. How many O-dips did you guys do? It's just the dumbest.
Yeah, never too many. We could go on forever. It was just, I remember us three doing it, and we get kind of confused, but we just kept going.
Because there was only three of us, but we couldn't remember each other's names. But
is that right?
Yeah, we did a few takes, and then like during the last takes, they were just like, just keep going.
Just
keep going.
I think in the first draft, there were eight. Or something.
O-dips.
And then we cut it down to like three. And then on set, I was like, no, we're doing a lot more.
I sort of love that you clarify it too, because, you know, Jason's gone to Australia, so it could be a giant surprise, but you remove all those stakes when Pillboy's like, oh, Jason, I thought you were dead. And you're like, yeah, but I'm not. And we talked on the phone last week. And Eugene's just like, yeah, I forgot. Like, these are
all in the same tone.
Oh my gosh. All in the same tone. Still excited to see you because I thought you were dead, even though I know you're not and I had forgotten. We then get an episode basically of Shark Tank.
Yes.
Chidi uses the VR machine to try to do a reset montage to try all these things. It's a great opportunity, I think, to shout out the VFX department and also props. Like, just the interface screen of the control iPad is cool.
Yeah.
Janet's sliding modules around, like, that's cool. And also, I would guess that the things that went in Will's ears were built. Like, those are probably not an existing thing.
Yeah, they had to put, like, a little LED on them, but they were, like, modified, like, Bluetooth pods.
Really cool. Chidi tries all these, versions, including one where he tries to be Special Agent Rick Justice. I love the moments when a little bit of Will pops through, because when he goes, nope, like, that's Will. Like, that feels like a familiar dude that I really like a lot.
He's so funny.
He's so good.
And I also love that you put a version in there where he ends up proposing, and it goes really sweetly, and he's like, wait, what am I doing? Like, how did I think this would work?
He's trying everything.
And then one of the cutest things of all time happens, the funniest and cutest things, which is that Eleanor gets in it and starts flirting with Simone.
Yes.
And Kristen's delivery of, like, what is happening is so, like, I don't know. It's a virtuoso performance.
It was, like, so much better than we could have ever envisioned it. Like, and also, like, probably the closest I'll ever come to actually writing a romantic scene in anything.
Maybe,
like,
yeah.
And it was just her creeping on her friend's girlfriend. Like, but, yeah, it was amazing.
It's funny and endearing and then does get creepy when they cut back to real life with Chidi pulling out the thing. And she's got her mouth wide open.
Yeah, she's ready.
Yeah.
Ready, yeah.
I mean, that became a little on the gross side. I would like to point out that Eleanor is wearing a new outfit in this episode. In the previous episode, she was wearing a pink sweatshirt that had a star on, I guess, her right, and then six lines going across. And she's wearing another six-lined thing here. Kirsten Mann, who designed this wardrobe, insists it's nothing, and that I'm reading too much into it. But it feels like these are the linear, non-Jeremy Baramy lines of these six characters.
You're getting close. No, I have no idea.
Nobody will take credit for it. Nobody will take credit for it. Let's listen to a clip. Full episodes of The Good Place are available on NBC.com and the NBC app.
So, Donkey Duck. Jason told us about your electrician license, and we have a career opportunity for you.
Yo, later for that. I got a business proposition for you, Pillboy.
Oh, dear Jason.
Oh, dear Pillboy.
Oh, dear Pillboy.
Oh, dear Talking Dog.
This is remarkable.
It explains so much.
Jason, I thought you were dead when I was alive. I was in Australia. I talked to you on the phone last week.
Yeah, but I forgot.
Oh, me and Pillboy have been cooking up something real special, and this time it's not fake meth. All right, Pillboy, tell them about our new product.
Sharks, how much do you spend on energy drinks and body spray in 1 week? $300? $1,000? What if I told you there was a product that combined these two things for one solution to all of life's problems and more? I give to you Double Trouble, the world's first energy drink slash body spray.
So, do you spray it on yourself or do you drink it?
You both eat.
This is the one, Jason. We're gonna be so rich. I'll finally be able to pay to have my calf implants move back up from my feet.
It's gonna be a lot tougher than we thought.
Tell me about it. Double Trouble sounds amazing. We should bid fast. The other sharks are going to want in.
Oh, Eugene's gosh. So funny that it's like he knows that when you're doing some sort of business presentation, you're supposed to use your hands for emphasis, but he doesn't know what you're supposed to do. So he's just flailing them around. It's so funny.
It does come off as a certain degree of semaphore. Like,
yeah.
He puts them out straight ahead at one point as though in conclusion.
He's watched Shark Tank. He sees them moving their hands around. He's like, okay, I guess I got to do that.
Eugene begins, Pillboy begins by saying, sharks. Like, as though, obviously, this is the run-up for that. Like, we've been practicing as though we're on Shark Tank.
Well, yeah. That's how all business pitches start in his mind. No, wherever you are, you always start it with sharks.
These guys are just so weird, and I just love it. I love that Donkey Doug has, you know, with hope things will go well, and he'll be able to put his calf implants back up where they should be.
Yeah.
Up to his feet. And, of course, they pitch this terrible body spray energy drink.
Yeah.
And Jason's on board. Like, he's like, oh, we should get in on the ground floor, this kind of thing.
We actually had that kind of in the first season, right?
Mm-hmm. I think was a joke that got cut, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Is this a candy bag kind of bit?
Mm-hmm. It was like when you first see the Jason reveal and you go into his butthole.
I beg your pardon?
Into his butthole. I guess Jason kind of shows Eleanor around the room, and then he picks up this can, and it's the body spray energy drink, and we just never ended up using it until now.
Was it Double Trouble?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, really?
Yeah, and a lot of the flavors were the same, I think.
Yeah.
Like raspberry musk or whatever.
Yeah. I have them here. I feel like it was raspberry perspirant.
Right, raspberry perspirant.
Cedarwood melon blast and 24-hour lemon musk extreme, which also is a lube.
Yeah.
Pretty gross. But that's a season one pull.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you had that prop made and we didn't pay any attention to it back then?
It just, yeah, I guess
it got cut for whatever reason.
Wow.
Yeah, we liked the joke so much that we brought it back.
Yeah.
Also, love, you both it in answer to you drink it or spray it. What was it? What was in the can?
It was just water. It was, okay. It was like pressurized water.
You also take a weird non sequitur ad hominem attack at Elon Musk here. Tahani says, what a weird creep. Why was I friends with him?
Yeah. Yeah. He's proven that true more since we shot that.
We're getting there. And then, of course, these three are just straight weirdos. And Michael says, like, yeah, I mean, it's not like we're robbing a bank. And you're like, no. It's a factory. It gets worse from there because it's not just a factory. It's three factories. I love that you and Eugene sort of say that in unison at the end, or he echoes it too, like three factories.
Yeah.
Just hilarious. Was the virtual reality simulator conceived of as kind of an infinity device? Like, we've been back on Earth. Janet's without her powers. We don't have that sort of VFX mayhem. Everything's been practical to this point. We had surveillance cameras, and they were doing it that way. Was that a way to add some infinity?
Yeah, that's about as close as we're going to get to, like, magic on Earth, I think. And we rationalized it by saying Janet's, you know, the smartest being who's ever been on Earth. And she would probably know everything about, you know, how to build a virtual reality system and how to build it better than a human could, and like how to sort of port that into somebody's mind through like subliminal frequencies. It's a lot of like, you know, hand waving. But yeah, this is as close as we get to like magic. So it's like the best Oculus Rift you could ever have, I think, is the idea.
Was that a touch point, a touchstone in the writer's room? Did you cite Oculus Rift?
Not necessarily. Just it was like all just virtual reality, like, you know, just using it. And of course, it didn't take long for it to become about porn. But yeah.
One tiny Easter egg that I would have missed had Eric Kisek not mentioned it last week was that the cafe, the real life cafe where the simulations had been happening, but now we're going to go see Chidi try to break up with Simone. There's an intersection outside, and the intersection is the intersection of that's not a street and this is a street, which is just so dumb.
That is, Mike pitched that like only a week or so ago. I got a text from Mike about that because this, you know, we've been in Australia this whole time. Between me and Joe and Jan and Megan, there were just constant, like, of course, intentionally bad pitches.
Sure.
Of that's not a knife, this is a knife, or that's not a blank, this is a blank. Just relentlessly pitching that structure to Mike's, like, just increasing annoyance. And then Mike, of all people, puts it in.
Yeah.
And it was great. I was like, do not take that out.
This is such a dense and interesting show. Here we have Chidi trying to do it. He's immediately sort of at wit's end because Simone's sitting at a different table than he rehearsed at forever and ever. And he tries. He tries to break up, and he says it's complicated, but it's happening. You dumped. He's not great at this.
No. In the room, we decided, like, he's probably never broken up with somebody in his whole life. Like, he probably...
Oh, that's true, isn't it?
He probably drove all of his significant others crazy, and they left, or, like, he would just like shut down until they decided to break up with him. So yeah, he would be very bad at it, we thought.
We finally see Pillboy's place of employment, an old folks home, where he's sort of an endearing character. Like, he's still Pillboy and he's sweet, but he's also a Pillboy.
Yeah, literally a Pillboy.
Find the origin of his name.
Yeah,
I like how it's like so stereotypically Filipino that he's a nurse in an old folks home.
is that a thing?
Well, there's a ton of like RNs and LVNs out of the Filipino community.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. My mom's a nurse, and then like I grew up in that environment. Like my parents were a little worried that I went with acting.
Oh, sure.
Because I started as a biochem major, and
whoa.
And then I was like, yeah, I have no passion for this. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, big reason why they're, I guess, Filipinos immigrated in the first place. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, they came over to North America to get jobs as nurses.
Really?
Yeah, there was, like, a shortage back in, like, the 60s and 70s, and immigration was really lax because, you know, like, Philippines is a U.S. territory still, so, or was.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a big thing.
I had no idea that connection. That's so interesting. Here's a total bit of complete inside podcast nonsense. The old folks' home scenes were being shot the day that we recorded the podcast for Chapter 5, Season 1, Category 55 Emergency Doomsday Crisis with Kristen Bell, Morgan Sackett. We were right across the hall. The old folks' home scenes are shot in what is our cafeteria, right? Mm-hmm. They completely re-rigged that room. In fact, Kristen, for listeners of this podcast, Kristen ran across the hall at a break in the podcast to ask Ted what the code words were before everybody knew the season one twist. Ted would sometimes ask the writers or producers, like, I know what Michael's playing here, but what's he really playing? And we learned that those code words were Michael's objective and his super objective. That room is also the room where Mike Schur and Kristen Bell shot the video of telling you guys the first time.
Yes.
The surprise.
The season one twist.
When you thought you were getting a promotion. So, did you know Pillboy was going to work in an old folks' home handing out pills? Is that why you named him that 4 years ago?
No. But I will say, the thing that makes Pillboy and Donkey Doug and Jason work is that, like, we wanted Pillboy and Donkey Doug and Jason all to be like super likable and like have good hearts, and like, because they are degenerate dirtbags, like they would rob your house without thinking twice about it.
They would rob each other. They talk about it, like, now that you're off the dance crew, we can legally rob
their
houses.
They slash the tire.
Yeah, but like, if you caught one of these guys robbing your house, you'd be like, oh, they seem nice. So like, that's what was so hard. Like, I mean, Eugene, we've known for a while through like comedy reasons and comedy places, and he's so good, so we were obviously going to use him in the show at some point. And then it was like, okay, we got to cast Donkey Doug. We got to find a Filipino like guy older than Manny. Like, how are we going to do this? Like, who can like play what Manny and Eugene can do? And it's like, okay, good luck. And this our casting department is so good at this. And then they sent us like all these auditions, and I think Mitch was the one we watched first. We were like, oh, it's this guy. Obviously, he's so good.
It's like, really good.
He, like, you totally nailed, like, the sort of just sweet likability, but also just, like, complete dirtbagginess that, like, you needed to have. It was like, oh, I guess this wasn't hard.
Eugene does a funny thing at the end of this where Tahani's like, you're not going to this thing. And he goes, okay. He just gives this big sniff that's like a punctuation mark. And she's like, do you want to know why? He's like, do you want to tell me? And she's like, not really. He's like, okay. Like, it's just like Eugene playing dumb is so funny and weird to me. That sniff is everything. Yeah, and it's him. That's not in any script anywhere.
Yeah.
There's just no way.
His like the thing in when he's dreaming about what his life's going to be like when he gets rich, where he's like imagining like waking up and going downstairs and being out of milk. It's just like, he's so good at that.
He's good. And he stares at the ceiling while he's doing it as though it's a reverie. Like, he's like, oh man. And he's like, he's looking almost straight up. It's the strangest thing. Yeah. And it so works. even Janet falling into the trap of using virtual reality for sex, because she's now envisioning something about Jason in a steam room in a strongman onesie.
Oh my gosh.
Eleanor asks to be in the front row at a very specific Lenny Kravitz concert. Did his pants pop open or something?
Yeah, this is something we were obsessed with in the room. It's crazy. Everyone should look it up if you haven't seen it yet. There's a specific Lenny Kravitz concert where he's getting low, playing the guitar, and he's wearing these leather pants, and they split right open at the crotch, and his very impressive wiener just pops out. And it's just in plain view.
Starts playing guitar.
Yeah, and then Eleanor, I like that she could use it for actual sex, but no, she just wants to be in the front row of Lenny Kravitz concert.
That is sort of a funny
one. She could have sex
away.
With Lenny Kravitz in that simulator, but no.
So I'm now picturing that piece of video is on a tab across the top of a monitor.
I think that would be actionable. Our tab and the monitor is pretty PG.
I was going to say actionable, meaning like in a sexual harassment way.
Yeah.
You guys still work here.
Yeah.
You can't have dongs flying around.
We're not showing porn to each other.
Not on the company machine.
Yes.
No. I'm with you. And now a word from a totally real sponsor.
We interrupt your monotonous, routine understanding of the world to bring you another Squalor News Game Changer. Society is effed. This new show will shatter all your preconceived notions about poverty, drug lords, gun running, weird-ass restaurants, skateboarding, and genocide. The Righteous Truth Seekers, who brought you America is Whack and the United States of Social Media, bring you the uncut, 100% truth, no corporate ties, no sanitizing the facts. This is not your parents' pundits reading the prompter. Society is effed. Boom! In your face. Wake up, sheeple.
We have a sort of emotional scene. Jason goes to intervene and with Donkey Doug. Talk a little bit about this top five fathers moment kind of thing.
Let's see. That's when I come into the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is where, like, since the beginning of the episode, you know, Donkey Doug and Jason's interaction have all been, you know, friends. But and it's all been just, like, very on the surface. But in this particular scene, you know, we dig deep, you know, down into, like, an actual emotion or type of actual family interaction. And I think it just gave it a bit of heart by having that scene. I remember doing that scene and going to the end of it where he yells out, you know, Bortles.
Yeah.
And he runs, and every time he did it, like, Mitch did it maybe, like, 7 or 8 times, and I could not stop laughing. Like, I don't know if it was just that, the way he said it, or just his run after, like, his arms, but I could just not stop laughing. And nobody else was laughing. It was just me, and I don't know. It was just hilarious.
There's this funny hiccup of, like, you say, like, Bortles, then there's a second of, like, am I? Yeah, I am. And you both left. And I think that's what makes it so funny is, like, we all know what's about to happen.
Yeah.
It's still going to happen.
Yeah. And the cops really take their time chasing you.
They set down the megaphone on the cop car, and then they're just like, we got to go do this.
This again.
I also love the callback to the, if you're a cop, you got to tell us if you're a cop.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
That's such a good
sirens
joke.
Are flashing.
Yeah. Right. Their understanding of the legal system is flawed, right? There was a thing in there where, like, you blessed one, like, amen was said, and what was that?
Jason says, I have to leave Pillboy alone because he's trying to save him. And Donkey Doug interprets that as, like, you're going to save his soul, you know, like,
yeah,
you're going to introduce him to Jesus or something.
Yeah.
And so he bows, but it's not like he doesn't know exactly, like, okay, what am I supposed to do in this situation? But yeah, that was such a fun scene to shoot.
You bow and then I give you the sign of the cross.
He blesses me.
I think we played around with different. I think at one point I wanted to, like, knight him or something.
Yeah. Like, tap each shoulder kind of thing.
Yeah.
Two guys who don't know what religious.
Right. Yeah. Don't know any of that convention, right?
Yeah. And, like, I just love that in that scene, like, you really get a sense of, you know, like, the father-son relationship between Jason and Donkey Doug. There's, like, this one weird, like, monologue where he's, like, when he's saying, you should run out the back and escape. This is what my grandfather did for his dad and his dad for me. You know, like, and then he's like, someday you're going to have to do this for your son.
I hope not.
Yeah, I love that reaction. And then it was surreal because, like, it was on the sound stages and, like, they have these big warehouse doors, and Donkey Doug for just a split second has, like, superhuman strength and he can open these doors by himself.
And then of course, like, the emotion I'm referring to is Donkey Dad, which lasts for a minute, and it's sort of this precarious of, like, wait, is this touching? And then, Donkey Doug can't have it.
Yeah, he can't.
He's like, nah, that's stupid.
And then he throws up the West Side signs.
I wonder what that was, yeah.
He throws up West Side, which is funny because he's from Jacksonville.
we wanted that scene to be very, like, after school special, like,
mm-hmm.
Like, very, like, almost saccharine, like just two dummies having, like, an emotional moment together and then just, like, nah.
And then I give a lot of credit to Rebecca Asher, who directed the episode, because, like, that scene, like, I think we did that scene a couple different ways, she really wanted me to dig into, like, the Hallmark moments of it. Like,
really? Yeah.
Yeah, she was like, you know, like, just go for it, you know, and, like, she was really encouraging in that way. So nice. I give her a lot of credit.
It sets up such a great contrast of, like, call me Donkey Dad. No, that's whack. Like, that's stupid. I take it all back. Have we discussed what the donkey is in Donkey Doug? Is it obvious?
Yeah, I think that's... I think I put Donkey Doug in season one.
Yeah.
About his stolen boogie board, framing his then partner for stealing boogie boards.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, in my mind, it's like... Yeah, he's got a huge wiener. So they call him Donkey Doug.
Asked and answered and instantly regretted. Instantly regret that question. Chidi and Simone have kind of their finishing scene, and Chidi says, I hope you'll continue with the study. Like, the study might help a lot of people. He's still on this mission of, like, even though we, you know, our lives have been spoiled, we're destined for the bad place because we have, you know, we've seen behind the curtain of what it is. He still wants this. I do love that you have her going, like, see you in the next life, sort of as a throwaway, and he, like, gets super defensive about it.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you know? Yeah, that scene was very, like, sad to shoot. Like, I mean, Kirby's so good. She's like, mm-hmm. I mean, both of them are, like, legit actors. Like,
oh, yeah.
They're, like, so good. And, like, yeah, that moment's, like, he can't tell her the truth. He has to, like, get away from her because he knows he'll doom her if he sticks around 1 second longer. But also, like, he does want to make sure she gets into the good place. So, like, the best he can do is just go, like, keep the study going, because maybe the study will help a lot of people and maybe she will earn enough points, you know.
But the thing that makes Chidi so virtuous, so pious, is that he can't lie. But, like, that's the point. Chidi cannot, even knowing the entirety of the futility of humanity, he can't just lie to Simone and be like, everything's fine, and still date this person that he loves, that he's really into. Like, he can't overcome it.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not so much like he thinks lying is morally wrong. I mean, I think he does, but I think he also knows himself to know, like, oh, if I lie, she's going to see right through me, and I won't be able to keep my story straight, and then I'm going to have to tell her the truth, and then everything's going to fall apart. So, like, mm-hmm. it's like a little bit of both of that. Like, I think it's, he just knows, like, if I lie, everything's going to go wrong.
Jason is successful in saving Pillboy. They convince Pillboy by telling them that they're astronaut spies, secret astronaut spies, that he has to, again, help as many people as possible. He can't commit crimes anymore. You then have this very emotional breakup. I love you, bro. I love you, bro. Talk about this ridiculous handshake.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Eugene, man. Like, I was surprised that we came up with that many maneuvers in that small amount
Wait,
of time that we had. Yeah, we
the choreographer.
We didn't have a rehearsal or anything. Like, we just came up with that, like, maybe 10 or 15 minutes before.
That you're. This is astounding. That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah, like we thought. Like, I guess, like, Morgan and everybody else just trusted us that we would come up with something. Like, in the script, it said that we do this ridiculous handshake.
That's all it was. The long ridiculous handshake, and then that you would start.
There are 23 points to this handshake. I counted.
Is there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess we just. I don't know, maybe we were just in a moment, and then we just started coming up with things, and then we had maybe like 5-10 minutes max to rehearse it, and we just, yeah, we came up with that.
You guys threw that trust is. Falls.
Yeah, yeah. Eugene came up with that one. Or wait, no, I think I came up with the trust fall, and then Eugene came up with a trust fall where he falls forward. I was like, that's so good.
Like a weeping dabs.
Weeping throughout.
Yeah.
Dabbing.
Was there also
weeping.
Like a, there was a dab?
Yeah.
Was there also like a psych in it or something?
Like, yeah, there was like a right hand slap, left hand slap, and then another right hand, but there's a psych, so I turned around, that sets up the trust fall. And then a call out to the Jags, like, Jags rule.
Yeah.
And oh man, it was, yeah, that, I watched that like 6 times when I saw it.
Is it shot in a one? Is it shot kind of in a just the medium?
I mean, I don't know. I don't remember. But like, certainly every time we shot it, like, it wasn't a thing where it seemed like they were remembering what to do. Like, it seemed like they had done
it. Oh, you had done it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We knew we like, as much, like, whenever we had a break or whatever, we'd practice it and just go through it. But it was, yeah, it was so funny. It was so good.
When you win your Emmy for choreography, it's so good. It's just the craziest. And then that you crumple in tears and Ted and Jamila are like, touch Eugene's back. Like, okay, we're not sure what we just witnessed, but this was a thing. And then, of course, in true Good Place fashion, there's a cliffhanger. We learn new information on the way out. The whole crew has flown to Budapest, right? To Hungary?
Yes.
Because it's Tahani's turn to try to deal with her family. I guess Camilla has something, an exhibition or something. And we learn that one of Eleanor's parents is not what we thought, right?
That's true, yes. Her mother is still alive. Mm-hmm. And that, I forget who pitched that line, but I need to go back. So my mother's alive, so I need to go murder her. This is so great.
I've forgotten how we were told that they passed away. Were we told?
Right, yes. So we just know that they're dead, but we didn't. I don't think we ever said manner of how they died.
And what's said in the pilot? Eleanor thinks they're...
They're in hell torturing each other. That's what she says, yeah.
Why is Michael withholding all the information about the parents?
It's true. That was a weird thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he's only just met them. Like, they've only just found out that about all of this
stuff.
It's
a matter of weeks, right?
Yes.
That they've known each other, that the jig has been up.
Yeah, or not even. Like, they, you know, they get revealed at the party. They tell the whole story. And then I think...
This is days later?
Yeah, this is days later. So, wow. Like... He didn't have time to tell them everything, and, like, certainly they formulated this, like, we call it soul squad, like, this soul squad idea. And so, like, you know, it was kind of a lot to lay on them all at once, so I think that's how we justified it. Like, yes, once they started figuring out, like, who they were going to save, then he could go, like, actually, you know, your mom is alive. Like,
so. Right. Before we go, Manny, let us talk about, from one episode ago, William Jackson Harper with his shirt off. We're recording these in advance, so we haven't seen the internet's reaction to it. But when I watched the advance of it, I texted Will and I was like, hey, dude, you look amazing. And you are going to receive Manny-level comments, inquiries, attention to your physical appearance.
What?
And it came up on this last episode of this podcast. We talked about it with Darcy about, you know, like how we talk about people's physical appearance. And Darcy was like, oh, yeah, we do this to women all the time. We do it to women at far too young an age, long before it's appropriate. Talk about what it's like to have people talk about your physical appearance a lot. Truly,
I'm just literally sweating right now just hearing that question.
It makes you uncomfortable.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not ever something I would ever get used to, at least I hope. No, I don't think I ever will get used to that. I think it just, especially when you start out in this career, you hope you don't get known for what you look like. You know, you want to be known for what you do and for what you contribute creatively.
Right.
I definitely, you know, tried to steer away now from looking myself up or things like that. I think that is somewhat helpful. I don't know. It's weird.
It's so interesting to me that it stands out now because we're talking about guys. Like,
yeah.
When the show broke open a couple years ago, like, people were like, oh, Manny's so pretty, Manny's so pretty. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of a weird thing to say, though. And they're like, oh, well, you do this to women all the time.
Yeah.
We should probably stop that.
Just wait till they see Manny in a cool-ass flight suit. Top Gun style.
Oh, we'll see.
Congrats.
Thanks. But, yeah, it kind of... It just makes you rethink things in terms of, should we really be doing that? But hey, it's also, at the end of the day, it's also like a nice compliment. I'm not like getting harassed or anything on the streets and like,
right.
You know, getting my butt pinched or butt slapped or anything like that yet.
And you're hoping that does come.
Yeah,
I see.
I'm still waiting for that. I mean, come on, guys.
I'm still waiting for them to talk about writers' appearances.
Yeah.
Oh, there's audible laughter from the next room. That's hilarious. We're in a soundproof room and we can hear them laughing at that.
Oh, man.
Mitch, what's good?
My family and my friends that have supported me throughout the years, that's good. I chose a different path from what the norm is. And for the most part, like, everyone's been really positive about it. And, like, they've been helping me get through everything. Like, I haven't always had the best times. So, you know, like, that's always good. I want to give a specific shout out to my mom and my fiance, because they're the ones that, you know, they're just so giving. They give me what they can, when they can, even if it's a sacrifice to them. Mm. Like, they put me before themselves, and I can only hope to repay all that.
Manny, what's good?
Oh, man. How do I top that?
Popsicles.
Yeah. What's good? I mean, yes, family, they've always been a big support system since day one, so I'll definitely comment on that. You know, I don't know if I've said this before, I'm sure I have, but, you know, my dad is like my number one fan, and They've always been, you know, with this industry, considering how things can go up and down, they've always been there. And on a lighter note, I think what's good is Matt's outfit.
Oh yeah. Describe it. What's Matt wearing?
It's like you got the camo pants.
Yeah,
you know,
camouflage.
Great fall weather. The boots as well. Waterproof, I believe, but also snug and nimble. Matt's looking legit. I wish we could take a picture.
Yeah, I was telling Mark, it rained in Los Angeles this morning for about 2 hours, so I took that as a cue to dress like I was going to the wilderness. But it's perfectly sunny and 80 degrees right now.
Aside from that, we're finally talking about a writer's physical appearance.
Thank you.
Matt,
thank
what's
you,
good?
I'm going to say my wife, Katie, is very good. I love her very much. But she also works for a thing that's very good, which is this place called Public Counsel. And they provide legal services to people who can't afford them. So you can't make above a certain amount of money. And, like, the cases she takes on are crazy. Like, she does criminal fraud for... you know, property theft, essentially. And people are like, oh, like, people get their stuff stolen. And she's like, no, people get their houses stolen. Like, it's like
really
the worst people preying on the most vulnerable. And these people are like the last line of defense. So they're good. Public Counsel, give to them.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. Go do something good.
Janet, what have we learned today?
A good place was the place inside of us all along that was good.
Oh, Janet, have you been sneaking magnets again?
You've been sneaking magnets.
Oh, this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
That was Lizzie Pace. Mm. Music composed by David Schwartz.
Edited by Trey Booty. Booty? Booty.
Oh, Janet.